The Consequences of Being a Person Who Matters and Everybody Matters, Part 3. And he said to them all, If any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever shall save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. Luke chapter 9, verses 23 through 24. So far, we've covered the first two components of Christ's command to follow him. First, denying ourselves. Second, taking up the cross. And now we should consider the final component. Having taken the cross that is appointed for me, I must follow him, bearing my cross. His statement implies several things. First, that in taking up a cross and following him, we are acting in duplicate of him. That is, we follow Christ not just in the sense of linear pursuit, but also in the sense of imitation. The Greek here indicates a unity. We are following Christ in the sense of copying him as he goes. You know the old joke, walk this way. But that is what Christ is saying and doing. So we are not the only ones bearing a cross, for Christ is ahead of us, bearing his cross. He is teaching us his way, and this is how he teaches us. First of all, Christ is clear that each of us has a cross that uniquely belongs to me, a cross that uniquely belongs to you. The cross that I carry is assigned to me by God. My abuse was no accident. The reins never slipped from God's hands. He handed me my cross, just like he handed your cross to you. Yes, I carry my sins, but I carry the sins of another person on my shoulders as well. The sins that scarred me, the sins that deform my youth, the sins that can still pain me. God assigned that to me, just like he assigned your suffering to you. Let us not forget, when God became a man, God assigned the sins of the world for God to carry on a cross. So nobody's been exempted here. He was innocent and he was good, and yet he suffered. And he took up that suffering with determination and love for us. Spiritual divas in the media and in books may make our union with Christ into an ecstatic, fragrant, touchy-feeling extravaganza of mutual admiration. The reality is that the first point of that union is suffering, real-life suffering, and we are commanded to embrace it, and that is our first point of union with Christ. If we would follow him, we must take up the cross given to us. That also means, like Christ, we love our enemies and offer them the forgiveness that Christ has the power to give them. Furthermore, with that cross, Christ says, follow me. It is the instrument of our suffering and grief, but it is also the instrument of his teaching for each of us. Christ shows me how to walk this walk because he has walked it. Christ lifts me up when I fall under my cross. Christ lays down the guidelines for this walk, to forgive, to love, to pray, but also to find myself so dependent on him that soon all my fears of him are replaced by confidence. In fundamentalism, I was told to put my cross away by the usual fundamentalist methodologies, dressing a certain way, observing a routine of devotions, avoiding certain music, movies, etc. I was kept busy keeping myself right with God by making a series of decisions. And I dreaded Christ because I thought I had to get a certain amount of work for him done and done the right way to please him. But now, here I am, pinned down by my cross again, and he hoists us both up, just like he always does, and I might be suffering, but not from fear of him. I've come to understand that he has put me in the footsteps of his path precisely so that he can sustain me. I'm not afraid of him anymore. I don't even think in terms of whether or not I measure up to him. I'm sure that I don't. But it's not about that. It's about him. That's what my cross is about. It's about Christ. As long as I carry it, I can't get by without him. And as long as I can't get by without him, he keeps sustaining me. That doesn't mean life is easy, but it does mean that my life and the suffering I encounter are meaningful, purposeful, and bringing me to a point. My suffering is united to his suffering. I have died in his death. I will rise in his resurrection. And all that he has from God the Father right now, at this time, on earth, is actually given to me. Christianity today is about political power and celebrity and money and big crowds, and none of it works. Have you noticed? Christianity in the USA is selfish, sexually corrupt, flippant, sexually corrupt, hopelessly divided, sexually corrupt, and ultimately, it's sexually corrupt. And if you think I am hitting one of those points too hard, let me point out that sexual corruption is a sign of a culture that throws away people. They might be worth a good fling, but once you've had them, you throw them away. That ethic is the antithesis of Christ's teachings, and it exists in the religious right, in evangelicalism, and in Christian fundamentalism, and it gets manifested by these ongoing sexual scandals and horrors. And fundamentalist preachers do it to children, sexually use them, and throw them away. Christ rebuked Peter with this observation, "Thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." That is, in urging Christ not to meet his fate at the hands of the Pharisees, Peter refused to be patient enough to learn the wisdom of God and the way God would establish his kingdom on earth. Instead, Peter rashly wanted to use the devices of this world to establish the kingdom of God on earth. He wanted Christ to rise as an earthly power. This is what Christian fundamentalists want today. They want a strong political party, a strong economy, low taxes, and the right to carry guns. We've tried it. It doesn't work. But sadly, many of those who have survived fundamentalism and exited it are still relying on the world's methods: power, clout, money, celebrity. The kingdom of God does not advance that way. We follow Christ, but the journey does not end with a cross. God himself came as the contemptible branch, as the Old Testament prophesied, an unknown man, a peasant, a laborer. From this tiny sprout of David, a kingdom came. He conquered by serving his people and then dying for them. That is his path, and those who follow him and want his kingdom to flourish must follow that path. There really is no other way. I have seen people clutching after fame and importance, and they end in sorrow and anger and alienation. It's great to have television documentaries on our side. It's great to have a court case reach national attention. But even though Christ had his share of fame for a time, his conquest of sin came upon the cross. The way of following Christ by denying self and taking up the cross is personal, individual, humiliating, heartbreaking, joyful, healing, illuminating, painful, and glorious. It's all those things, as far as I've known. Christ doesn't veil the truth. The New Testament is written mostly by martyrs. But the only way to conquer is to conquer his way, and that means denying ourselves, each of us taking up the cross appointed to us, and following him.